Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Two Narrows podcast. I'm your host, James, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Timmy Long.
Hi, everyone.
We're up in Ballymun again. We're spending a lot of time here at the moment, Timmy.
We sure are.
And we're with our friend, Terence Power, from the Talking Bollocks podcast.
Hi, Terence.
Thanks for having me on, boys. I appreciate it. I've been a fan of yours, our podcast, for a long time, so it's a pleasure to be on.
Likewise, thanks, and we were on yours.
Yeah, yes, we're on.
Ago, and it went really well, and... You'll be no stranger to our audience, you know. Yeah. We have a lot of similar followers, I would say.
Definitely, yeah.
Because I suppose we've a lot of similarities in terms of, well, from working class backgrounds, and we have this podcast and we talk about social issues and stuff like that, just on different sides of the country. So there's a lot of similarities there. But I'd say it's novelty. It's new for you to be on that side of the fence, is it?
Oh, big time, yeah. I'm a bit nervous as well, boys. Yeah, it's a bit mad being on this end of the table, because when you're over there, you kind of have control, isn't it? Like, you decide where the conversation goes, and you kind of have that bit of freedom. Yeah. But over here, I'm kind of like, oh, where's this going to go?
Your perspective on that, then. I don't mind being interviewed, because you're under no pressure to come up with something smart to say.
It's true.
Or a good question. It's like you're responding instead of trying to facilitate it. So,
well, you have to try and help out as well, you know what I mean? Yeah. Sometimes, like, if you have someone on the other end and they're not giving you much, you're trying to pull, you know what I mean? So I'm here saying to myself, I bet the blade can give them a dig out as well by answering, you know what I mean? Not just, like, one word answers and stinging you, staying. You're like, oh, what am I saying now, you know?
It was at a live podcast.
It's a difficult one.
A few years ago, Blind Boy was in St. Luke's, a church, nice little venue in Cork. And he had Mick Flannery, he's a singer, songwriter from Cork. He was actually on the Late Late Show last night, but... he was a bad guest.
Was he, yeah?
One word answers, dry, no crack.
It's not easy.
And you could see Blind Boy was like, for fuck's sake, you know what I mean? And when we met him then, I was saying to Blind Boy, I said, was at that podcast, it was dry as well. He said, I know, he said he was too shy.
Yeah.
So I saw it like, the just because you have a good story, you have to be able to tell it as well, don't
100%, you? 100%, yeah. And that's what I'm saying, like, with people like that, when you're on username now, so you're hosting this podcast here, yeah? You kind of have to try and drag her out of them, no matter what. You can't just give up on it and go, come here, mate, it's no use. Yeah. See you later. You have to pull her, you know what I mean?
Sometimes
so it's not easy.
Take a few minutes for someone to get comfortable.
Yeah, they get easy.
Well, then they're much more chatty. And when they get more chatty and they start getting comfortable in the situation, then they'll start opening up about stuff, you know.
Definitely.
Which is what I'm doing to you now.
Easing me in.
And getting you, and robbing you in. getting you nice and soft and gentle.
That podcast on YouTube, African-American guys, but it's a real drinking podcast.
I know the one you're on about.
Game was on it now.
Kanye West was on it.
It's fuck moldy. They get pissed on it.
Yeah.
And so they come on, and I remember the game came on. Now the game is in his 40s, right?
Yeah.
He comes on with a balaclava. I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Kanye West is the same. He come on with a sock and over his head. Yeah. After a half an hour anyway, they're taking shots of whiskey and drinking fucking 40 ounces or whatever. They're lying or drunk then. And so everybody then is waffling the ears off. You should just be on it. But then Joe Rogan was on with your man, he's in the bed with at the moment, singer, tattoos on his face, a wife.
Post Malone?
Yeah.
You seen the bad players,
isn't he? See him on Joe Rogan. They were on their heads on magic mushrooms.
What, on the show?
5 hours.
The podcast, James.
That's risky, that boys, isn't it? Fucking hell. Like, that's risky, but like you were saying there, I think the first 5-10 minutes of every podcast, just the first 5-10 minutes is always the hardest part. Yeah. That's why we do the thing, the zingers, you know what I mean? And either or, like, would you rather? just let's all ease into it, because even as a host, it's kind of the first 5 minutes, it's a bit like touch and go. You're saying, where's this going to go? And you're trying to get a feel for the guest and the energy in the room and stuff, you know. But after that, then it's just flying.
It's just a chat. It's just like people sitting at a table having a chat, whatever topic it is. And you know what? It's, and I used to think it was just Cork people, but I think it's with the Irish alone in general. We could sit here talking about Nike runners. By the time we're finished talking about Nike runners, we're down this road here talking about cars, which is completely, but that's a half an hour down the road. You know, it's, we're so good at telling stories and getting caught up over stuff that's not even the topic.
We get to maybe show the people a different side too, maybe get to know you a little bit more in depth. So will you take us back to where you're from, where you grew up, what it was like for you?
Yeah, so I'm from Dublin's North Inner City. I'm from Doors Estuary Flats. And my earliest memories growing up in the flats was like very positive, like the community spirit was unbelievable, boys. Like, I would not change my upbringing for anything. Now, I'm going to get into it, which is, and obviously it was tough for a lot of it. But my earliest memories were good. I can't remember too much being wrong. My dad was obviously still alive at this time, so we lived with my ma and my dad, me and my two brothers in the flat. And then my ma and dad split. And my mum moved out then, we went with her, and we used to stay with our dad on the weekends. So every weekend we'd get down there, but I think I was about 7 or 8 years of age. We were living up in the cattle market, just up beside Cabaret or this. And it was a Friday night, we were to get down and stay with our dad that night. And my used to bring us down, we'd stay there for the weekend. And I remember I didn't want to stay in the house that night, in the flat that night. I don't know what it was. We always had like I can't remember too much. You know, when you're thinking back to a young age, you can't remember in detail a lot of stuff. Yes. But I can remember it being a very positive place. So like when it came to Friday, we used to be like, oh, I can't wait to get down and stay with me dad. We're in the flats, we're staying with me dad. Things were good. We're with me ma had a tough upbringing, she did. So with her, like when we moved out, like she was an alcoholic. There was a lot of parties in the house and stuff like that. There was a lot of madness going on. It was a bit like, oh, what's going on here? So getting down to our dad's was very positive for us. We loved it. And then I remember this one night, we went down, it was the Friday night, and we were down there, and my ma's on the balcony, and she's having a few cans, and she's getting ready to go home then. And I remember running down to her, and I was screaming, saying, I don't want to stay there tonight, I don't want to stay. And she was like, why, what's wrong and all? What's it happening? I said, nothing, I just don't want to stay. I didn't want to stay that night. Don't know what it was. And me brothers and me ma, we still talk about it to this day. We can't put our finger on it. It was the only time I ever didn't want to stay with me dad. I just didn't want to stay that night. Something came over me. So me and my ma went home, my two brothers stayed there obviously. My ma gets a phone call at about 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's my brother, and he's crying saying, my dad's at the getting into the end of the bed and he's kicking me. He was taking an epileptic fit. But then he came over and he rang me ma and he said, look Rachel, I'm grand. I'm at the getting back into bed there and I'm all right, everything's all good. Then the next morning, my brothers ring me ma again. And saying, my dad's not waking up, he's not waking up. He passed away that night. Took an epileptic fit and died. And I remember, like, to this day, we still talk about it. It's mad, like, boy.
Oh, wait, how old were you?
I was probably seven, eight at that time. But
had you a good relationship with him?
Yeah, great relationship with him. That's what I was saying. That was our safe space, like. Although my ma is a good person, but at that time she wasn't in her right mind.
She was going through her own stuff.
Exactly, yeah. You know what I mean? So she wasn't in her right mind, but so like our dad's was a safe place, you know what I mean? So, and I remember, like, that's what I can remember. I can't remember a lot of stuff in detail. As I said, I was young, but I always remember we couldn't wait to get down to me dad, you know what I mean? Because that was the safe space. There was no madness in the house. Like, he wouldn't be having parties or drinking and getting drunk. Where with me ma, she was a head case at the time. She had her own problems, you know what I mean? So,
how did that affect you at that age?
Like, I don't really know. I know, like, I started getting into an awful lot of trouble and stuff like that. It's only looking back now. At the time, I didn't really know anything different. You know, as a kid, you don't go, oh, my mental health is at me. Especially back then,
you're,
you know,
just
what
reacting to your environment.
You're just reacting
so
to it.
When you get older, you look back and you can analyse it then.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So, but I don't know what happened that night. I just didn't want to stay, and he passed away. So obviously my ma left the house that she was staying in there, and we moved back into the flat then. So there was me, my ma, my two brothers. But from then, life got tough, boys.
Like, you didn't have the safe space to go on.
No, it was, and like, we always use humour to like get over stuff, and like me and my brothers like to laugh about a lot of stuff that happened, even though it was fucked up, you know what I mean? But like it was tough, boys. Like I remember like the flat, like it was always dirty. We were dirty kids as well. Like we were never washed, like, and the flat was always dirty. Like I remember like we had bunk beds in the room and there'd be three of us, but the three of us would sleep on the bottom bunk together because the room would be that cold. Mm. And I have a fear of like, do you ever see a duvet with no sheet on it? Mm. Just a white cotton coming there. I have a fear of that now, boys, because it used to be just that and one pillow that was similar material. And we'd all sleep together in that shake and the walls would be damp. The floor, there'd be no like floorboards or lino or anything. The floor was just like a black kind of concrete, dirty floor. Like it wasn't a nice place to be, you know what I mean?
I can imagine it.
And like, you've probably seen we had Micheál Martin on a couple of weeks ago, boys, and this way I wanted to address a couple of things with him, because I think him personally, and I think a lot of people don't really understand that kids go hungry even in this day and age, never mind back then. But that's kind of hard to believe if you never went hungry. Do you get me? And what I was kind of mentioning about how we use, you know, me and my brothers always laugh now about like, there was never food in the gaff, boys. Never, ever food, ever. Like, you open the press, there's nothing. The fridges were empty. It was just a cold, dark place. But me and my brothers always laugh about, like, we'd kill each other because there'd be three slices of bread in the press, right? Or that there'd be green mould and it'd be, like, a bit crunchy, the bread. And we'd kill each other over who got the heel. And whoever got the heel, like, we're laughing, you know what I mean? And we'd pick the, mould over there and we'd put red sauce on it. And that's what we'd eat, boys, red sauce on a mouldy bread slice, you know what I mean? And that's how it was, like, you know what I mean? Like, we'd no telly. I never watched a telly growing up, you know what I mean? Like,
how old are you turning now?
Could have been, like, I'd say from the age of about 8 to 12.
What age, you know?
I'm 27 in August now.
Fucking not very far.
No, it's not too long ago,
boys. In the 2000s.
Yeah, it's 2000s.
How was school for you in those years?
School, yes. School was rough, boys. Like, I went to primary school. I was in an awful lot of trouble in primary school. And I noticed, it's like, it's only now when you kind of look back, I noticed that, like, there was a period of time in school where I wasn't a bald kid. And I think maybe something switched, and it could have been after my dad died, maybe, without realising it, where I just didn't want to be in school. Like, I went and caused trouble every day. Like, I'd be getting bleeding. Like, go on the Mitch and I'd get arrested. And it was just a mad old time. I was like, primary school, I was a very intelligent kid. Very intelligent kid. And I always remember I had the ability. Like, sometimes our aunt, my auntie Betty, she would take us over to sleep there. When we stayed with Betty, we'd have a dinner. She'd make us sandwiches before we got to bed and a cup of tea, a nice shower. She'd wash the uniform for us. But at the time, I didn't realise the benefits of that. So the next day in school, I was performing better. I was, you know, I had a bit about me and I wanted, not that I wanted to be there, but I didn't mind being there. And I was intelligent, boys. I was on the ball with stuff. But
You were getting your needs met.
Exactly.
You were getting your security met. You were getting your food.
Yeah.
You were getting your, you know.
Sleep. I'm going into school hungry, dumpty. Shame of it.
Yeah, and that's where I was. That's where I was for most of the time. Well, all the time. I'd go into school and, like, his uniform would be manky dirty and our fingernails would be black. You know what I mean? And I know other kids, and even in the flats, I know that there was parents kind of telling their kids to, like, stay away from us, me and my two brothers, because, like, they're going to get down the wrong road.
Were there ever any interventions from teachers or principals or social workers?
No, and I kind of hold a bit of
resentment
towards the school, because I think when I look back, I go, how could you not see something? How could you not? Even in terms of my behaviour, boys, I was very, very bald in school, like very bald. I didn't want to be there. But the school would never suspend you or expel you. The primary school, they didn't do it. They didn't believe in that, which is probably a good thing. Because
they should still have like school completion programme or homeschool liaison officers, the SNAs, there's certain staff members in there that are designated to help people like yourself.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, that's a red flag. You see the neglect on you. And like, you should be linked in with somebody, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think it was so obvious. I think even when I look back at pictures of me as a kid, I just look unhealthy. You know what I mean? Like, I never looked like a I don't even know how to explain it. I just looked like a rough kid, you get me? And but even in terms of, like, when it come to, like, break time in the school, like, everybody be taking out their lunch boxes, and they'd have that packed lunch and that tin foil sandbone, that little Actimel or whatever they had. And we never had that. We didn't. So we would just sit there and wait. That ends, comes to the bigger break then, the 1 o'clock break or whatever it is, and the school would have, like, sandwiches, like, up the front then. So this kind of came into the school at this stage, and we'd be going up, we'd be robbing sandwiches and all into the back pocket, into my school bag, you know. But I'm thinking, how did the school never notice that me, like, me two brothers were a class above me in school, but they would have been the same. So how did the school never notice? We never had a lunch. We were never clean. Like, I think it was so obvious, you know. So I hold a bit of resentment for that. And maybe I shouldn't, but I do. Yeah, you know what I mean? Look, I think I would have copped it from a mile away, you know.
Like, your mother wasn't able to look after you, but it's up to other adults then to step in.
Yeah.
And they didn't.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And that's why I feel that way. Then, obviously, get the secondary school. I was thrown out of secondary school early, boys. Like, that's where you could get suspended and expelled. And I was, when I joined the secondary school, you do an entrance exam and you do these bits. And I was in the high class. I was to do higher level everything for the junior shit, so to study everything higher level. So, like, I was intelligent. Yeah. But I had an SNA for my troubles, like, not for learning difficulties, but, like, to follow me around and make sure I wasn't. But I didn't want to be in school, boys. I was done with school. So I got kicked out there at the end of 4th year, I think it was. The end of 4th year, gone out there. And then I ended up in another school, Henrietta Street School. I need to give them a shout out because, my God, they were unbelievable with us. They were brilliant. They took me in. It was like, it was school and we learnt, but they understood us as kids. Because all of us in there, there was only 20 kids in the school. 4 classes, 5 students per class. And we were all kind of troublesome kids, if that makes sense. We were all kicked out of school. Yeah. But these knew how to look after us. They knew how to deal with us when we were having our meltdowns or anything like that, you know what I mean? So they were very, very good with us.
Like, in Cork, we have St. Kevin's and we have the Cork Life Centre. But it's a school for people that were failed or didn't work out in mainstream education. Yeah. But it's not about doing higher level for your junior sort. It's about the development of the child emotionally, psychologically. If the child is happy, you're winning.
Exactly.
If the child is happy, the grades will look after themselves.
Yeah.
It's not all about the grades, you know. It's just getting the order of things right.
Yeah.
And that the grades up here, the child's well-being is up here.
Yeah.
The grades will follow suit.
Definitely, yeah. And
Do you know, sorry.
Go ahead, yeah.
Do you know when we're in first year, or a transition from primary into first year is a difficult process?
Yeah.
Because you're going from whatever solvents you're at before then into first year, where you're looking at third and fourth and fifth class fellas who are smoking a bit of weed, taking tablets, a bit of coke, whatever.
Yeah.
And then you kind of look at the boys and you're like, fucking hell, how was that for you?
Yeah, see, even when I went into first year, I wasn't really at it. And then, boys, I was only, you're 12, 13 going into first year, so I wasn't even at any of that. And I was smoking cigarettes, boys, but that was it. I wasn't looking at anything. And just didn't cross my mind. I wasn't really looking at it at that stage. It wasn't on my radar, you know what I mean? That came into my life about 15, 16. Drinking came into my life about 14.
Yeah.
You're down the flats and you're getting your fuel bottles and you're getting locked and you're acting the bollocks. And life is good then. You're having you're looking forward to your Friday and your Saturday night to get down and get drunk because you're young and you shouldn't be. And it's just a kind of a buzz.
Yeah.
But obviously, boys, as you know, that gradually gets worse for people like us. Yeah. Some people can do that and have that few drinks throughout life.
When you come from neglect and trauma, well, that's more likely to end in problematic drug use, alcohol use, where we spoke about this earlier on as well, with somebody, like, most young fellas will have a drink 15, 16, no matter who you are.
Yeah.
But when you come from a background like your own, you're more likely to end up in trouble with that drink because you're using it, not just to socialise, but to give your self-esteem, confidence, to block out the pain, the neglect and all that stuff, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It becomes like a coping mechanism as opposed to just to have a crack.
Well, that's exactly where I was, and it's only when I got away from it then I kind of look back and go, that's exactly what was happening there, you know what I mean?
So, do your junior cert in Henrietta
Street? I did my junior cert in there, and in there previous, they only did maths and English on the junior cert. That's all they did, because you're only in 9 till 2 every day, and you went on a school trip every Thursday, and there was a half day on a Wednesday and a Friday, and you call the teachers by their first name, and you can wear your own clothes, you can wear the school uniform, it's up to you, and they just want you in the doors. And once you're there, that's good enough for them. Mm. Once you're in there and you're learning something, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not strict.
It's like, informal.
Yeah. And you know, one of the reasons I'd say maths and English was a big thing back then. Mm. No trades. All you needed was more maths and English.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what they were thinking.
Yeah. It's for trades. And like a lot of the other trades, you know, electrician and plumbers, it's a little bit higher. You have to go a little bit higher. But those kind of schools, that school helped you massively.
Big
right?
time.
What was going on at home at the same time with the.
Yes.
Was everything on? Was it the same?
It was the same. So obviously, my mum was an alcoholic, but as far as I can remember, I would come home from school. And my ma would be locked, drunk. You know what I mean? You come in and she's gaggled and there's probably 4 or 5 other people there and you don't even know any of them. And they're all just sitting around drinking and doing whatever that they own. You know what I mean? And that was always there for as far as I could remember. But do you always use the term clean on this, yeah? Clean, yeah, if you get clean, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because that's the term
I know some people get upset by that, but if that's what you want to say,
if that's your terminology, you just built away.
Yeah, yeah. So my ma ended up getting clean then. So my ma is clean probably 12 years now. So it would have been...
Fair play to her.
Yeah, yeah. She my ma was in a bad way, boys. She was. And she come on to... We had my ma on our podcast and she told her story, boys, and it's powerful, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's had a rough life.
That must have been emotional.
Yeah, it was mad. It was like a full circle moment.
Do you have a bit like, was there a mixture of tears and laughter?
Yeah, yeah. It was a heavy episode.
Because it must have brought up a lot for both of you. Yeah. No, more for you, because you could probably remember a lot more than her.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
You know, so... Yeah. So yeah, that's powerful.
Yeah,
that's powerful.
And that's another thing I resented me ma for years and years, boys. Like I never. So actually, boys. So I told you already, boys. I have ADHD. Yeah, so I'm trying to go in linear fashion, things just coming back. And,
you do whatever do you know works what I mean? For you, Terrence. I completely get it in here.
But when in the midst of all this madness with me ma and like. Things were rough at home, yeah. My ma took sick and she was in hospital for about 8 weeks she was. And we lived with my auntie Betty. She minded us, took us in, open arms and minded us for them few weeks. But when my ma got out of hospital, I went back to my ma. My two brothers ended up staying with Betty. She took them in and she reared me two brothers. No problem to her. Just took them. She's a diamond. She's an angel, boys. Like God knows where we'd be if we hadn't got Betty in our life. You know what I mean? She really did. But so my two brothers who are twins, they ended up staying with Betty. But I went back to my ma's. And things was just rough, boys.
Were you worried about your mum? Is that why you went back?
Yeah, I couldn't.
Yeah, you couldn't leave her in Rome because you know she could. You knew the way the drug use and the alcoholism was, and you were afraid for her.
Yeah, do you know what I used to do with Timmy sometimes? And this is a bit of a mad one, boys. So that'd be. Parties going on downstairs in the flat, and it'd be only me upstairs, me ma's downstairs, and they're all partying. Random people that'd be roaring and shouting, and I'd be worried that a fight was going to happen and something would happen to me ma. So I'd sit at the top of the stairs with a sweeping brush and I'd wait for a fight to break out. They didn't break out every night, but they broke out the odd time. And when I'd hear roaring and shouting, even if they were laughing, that fear would come in like there's a fight breaking out.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd sit at the top of the stairs with a sweeping brush just in case that happened to her, and I'd fall asleep at the top of the stairs sometimes. Because I'd be worried. But then I'd resent her as well because she's put me through this. Even as a kid, I knew it was wrong, you know what I mean? But I only really started noticing things was wrong in my flat when, like... Because, like, some people had it worse, boys, and some people had it a lot better. And this in the one set of flats, boys, yeah? So I'd go over to a friend's flat and they'd have, like, the telly on with Sky Sports and they'd have a press for sweets. Like, just, like, crisps and chocolate and stuff like that. And the heating is on.
I loved going to them houses.
Oh, mate, they were great, weren't they? So I loved it. And the man would come in and go, well, I already use a Mazzoni's or a Domino's. And I'm like, this is a bit mad. It's not like this in my flat, you know what I mean?
It's just normal.
And this is at an early age. I'm starting to go, maybe this is where it's put. And then I'd go home to a cold, damp flat with, like, trouble and violence and you know what I mean. So it's like it's only when you're getting them sort of memories back you're kind of like, what's going on here?
You thought the neglect you experienced was that's just the way things were.
Yeah.
And then you went to somebody else's house and you think, fucking hell.
Yeah.
We're not living at all in my house, like.
Yeah, exactly. It's only then when you start realising, you know what I mean, and it's kind of a bit mad.
What did you do after the junior? So did you do LCA or outreach or anything like that?
Went into FOSS. I did. Yeah, I went into FOSS. Again, kicked out of FOSS. I went into. I was kicked out the second fuss I went in. I was just a troublesome kid, boys. I couldn't. I didn't want, I had a problem with authority. I didn't want nobody telling me what to do. What kind of what, I knew we're all at that age, you get me?
On the shoulder.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And I was actually a fearful kid. Look, I lived in a lot of fear, but that was on the inside. Nobody knew that on the outside. On the outside, I always had that little chip in my shoulder and I wanted to let people know I'm not afraid. Like, and I'd fight very often, even though I was afraid of fighting. I used to hate fighting, but I'd fight very frequently. And I think it was one of them, like, someone could say something, they don't even mean it. But I'd start to fight over it to let them know I'm not afraid, even though I am. Yeah. Does that make sense, boys? Like, I was just one of them kids with a chip on my shoulder. And just a troublesome kid, you know what I mean?
Do you know what? You were behaving in a way exactly to your situation.
It's understandable. Like,
completely understandable.
Yeah.
Do you know a lot of the stuff you're speaking about there? I would have done the exact same stuff.
Yeah.
All of it, if not, your story is very similar to my own. You know, so we cope in whatever way we can, and sometimes we have to adapt to our environment. And if your environment is violent, and you have to adapt to that, and sometimes that means you might have to act in violence to survive there, and that's completely natural. That's normal.
Yeah,
you know, it's like two lions in a pack.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to act like an animal to protect yourself. You're going to protect yourself in any way you can.
Definitely.
Even though it's probably not innate, built into you. But you're looking around you and you're starting to understand, I won't survive here in this environment if I don't start becoming the same as the people
the
here.
Best form of defence.
Yeah.
That's where you were looking at things, like.
That's exactly it, boys. And it's only, again, everything is only in perspective. At the time, you don't realise that.
Nah.
Do you know what I mean? But like, even in moments, like, I'd boast and I'd have a big rage of anger, and then after I'd go, that's not even me. Okay. I knew it wasn't me as a person, do you get me? But it was just how I acted. It was just how things came out of me, you know what I mean? And then, like, obviously I was diagnosed with ADHD in my early teen years as well, but to this day I'm still not educated on ADHD. I still don't know. I know a bit about ADHD, but I'm not in depth with it. I don't know how I should be coping and how I shouldn't be coping. I've been doing... on our podcast, we had an ADHD expert on, Enda Murphy. He's brilliant, boys. And I've done a bit of therapy with him, and he's been learning me about it, boys, and it's mental, the stuff. Like, it's only now, people have this...
He's a psychiatrist, us.
Yeah, as a kid, yeah.
Is he a psychiatrist?
I was saying, I see him when as a kid, yeah. I think he is, yeah. I think, like, that's what it is, yeah. Or, like, people have a perception of ADHD that... Like, you're just always moving, you're on the go, you're hyper, blah, blah, blah. But you don't realise people with ADHD, like, we're up and down and we crash. Mm. You know, I have ADHD, boys, and a lot of the time I can be crashed and I'm just in my own head and I can't do nothing. I know what I have to do, but I can't get up and do it. And it's a tough one to explain. And even, like, having the buzz, boys, like, getting a dope. So we don't, people with ADHD don't produce dopamine, like the neurotypical person, boys, yeah? So when we produce dopamine, so you're on a base level, let's say, yeah? When a neurotypical person produces dopamine, they'll go up and then they'll come back to base level. People with ADHD, when they produce dopamine, they go up and then they go below base level. And then you have to walk your way back up to a base level again and go across. And then if you produce dopamine again, it's back down and it's back. And that's what my whole life is, boys. It's just crashing, getting a buzz.
In your mood.
Me mood, boys, it's mental, like, you know what I mean? And I'm only starting to learn about ADHD in the last few months, like, and I'm diagnosed with that over 10 years, like, you know, which is a bit mental. And I think that has a role to play in where I ended up as well in terms of addiction.
Yeah.
That's a massive correlation between addiction and ADHD.
Yeah.
The connection between both is huge.
Yeah.
A lot of addicts... There's actually factual, and there's papers and there's research done. A lot of people that are caught up in addiction, a lot of them will have ADHD, as well as a lot of different learning differences as well.
Yeah.
So that's factual.
It makes sense, like, if your mood is up and down like that, and then you start drinking and taking drugs, and all of a sudden the mood is good.
Mm.
You want to have the good mood all the time, and just self-medication. But when you're said a few times, when you're young, you don't have that ability to think like that. You're just like, I know a fucking drink is good, or the weed is good, or the tablets is good, I'm going to take that. It's funny, as you get older or mature, you're looking back, you're thinking, fucking makes sense now, that piece in your life together than joining the dots. It's like, no, I'm bad, I'm not a bad person. was doing all this. I know I'm not bad, but I was treating him like shit, or I was angry at that time, but you can understand it as you get older, you know?
Yeah.
That's why it's good for people to have do podcasts like this, that teachers know, and social workers and people like that, that are around young people that are, like you, can identify that he's acting out, but he's actually a good kid. If you understand his background, you know what I mean? It's very understandable, you know what I mean? Yeah. There's nothing wrong with him. The right support, it can be a good kid, you know what I mean?
Definitely, and that's why, like I said, I hold resentment towards, like, schools back then and stuff like that, because I'm like, how can you not read between the lines? Yeah. And just trying, I'm not saying treat these kids different, but try and nurture them a little bit better, you know what I mean? When they're acting out, get to the bottom of it. You see a kid coming in, dirty boys, dirty clothes, they don't look well, they haven't got lunch, they're not eating.
Yeah.
Surely they're the signs there, like, this kid needs help.
I will say this though, and I've noticed in the last few years, I'd say around your time in school, that was probably the end of that kind of whole era. Because I was in school in the 80s and 90s, and you're completely right, but there was a lot of these things weren't even known by teachers, or there was no words from in the medical dictionary, a lot of different stuff. But I'd say in the last 10, 12 years, right, I think there's a lot more education there for teachers, and there's a lot more SNAs in schools. I think nowadays, if you went into a school, you'd be picked out straight away and looked after, because there's so much of an emphasis after being put into kids in schools that come in those kind of conditions, dirty, hungry, there's a smell off them, they're not being washed, they have nothing in their bags, you know. It has to be done. I actually think it's against the law to leave a child like that inside in school. So we are fortunate knowing that our kids, grandkids, will grow up in schools where all these services will be there to ensure that kids have been looked after.
Definitely, yeah. And we're definitely making progress in that.
Yeah.
We have a lot of teachers that listen to the podcast and SNAs and stuff like that, and they reach out to us and they tell us about the steps that they're making and the process that the schools are making and stuff like that. And I love to hear that, boys.
Yes.
Because I never, ever want another kid to grow up in the conditions I grew up in.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I know I'm not even the worst of the bunch. That's the sad part about it. I'm not even the worst in my set of flats. Never mind in the inner city, boys. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's people a couple of doors down who had a worse than that, boys, which is scary to think about, you know what I mean? Like, it's rough, boys, you know what I mean? But, like I was saying, as I start getting older, I probably found the drink at about 14. That's when I'd be out on the weekends having a bit of fun. 15. 16, then I would have found cocaine, boys. That was a game changer for me. Game changer. Again, it'd be just on the weekends, few bottles and an odd sniff, boom, grand. Used to love it. Great bit of fun. I could handle it. Like, it was like, I never wanted more. At that time, I thought I can't wait by Friday night, a little 50 bag, a sniff, and boom, that's it. And it was like that for a while, maybe for a year, where I could do that. Then, as you're going, it just gradually gets worse, boys. Yes, now as I said, with any sort of drug, anything. I have friends, boys, this is so sad to me. I have friends who are in their late 20s trying coke for the first time. Mm. And I'm telling them, please don't. Like, you have a, you're not 15 here. I can't tell you not to try it. And when you're a kid, you think, an adult is telling me what to do. You fuck up, I'm going to do me. Yeah. You're a fully grown adult, Eve. Yeah. Don't, like... You see, what makes it worse for me, boys, is they're from the same area as me. They haven't never touched it. And they get to their late 20s or their mid-20s and now they want to try it. You've seen, it's crippled a whole entire area. And now you want to try it. And you should be able to listen at this age now. Yeah. You should be able to sit
you're
back.
You're putting it all on the line. Your girlfriend or your wife, your kids, your house, your job.
Do you know what it is, James?
Mental health is all on the line.
They don't understand that because they're seeing what we seen it as when we were 15, 16. So when we were doing it at 15, 16, this is a bit of buzz, it's a party. Yeah. And I'm only doing it on the weekends, it's grand. So that's the way they're seeing it. I'm only doing it 1 or 2 days a week, it's grand. They don't understand. Boys, nobody wakes up and chooses to be an addict.
No.
Nobody wakes up and goes... If I keep doing this, I'm going to be an addict in 3 weeks, so I'll stop on 2 weeks and 6 days.
Yeah.
No one knows that.
Well, it's progressive.
It's progressive, and it gets to a point where you'll do your first few and your grand, and then you'll go out and you'll have a drink and you don't need it. Then you'll go out and you'll have a drink and you'll want it. Then you'll get to a point where you need it every time you have a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll get to a point where you're sniffing and you don't have a drink in you. People don't understand. They think because... they're only starting out, or because even people who've been doing it a year, there's people that have been doing it a year or two and they only have a few sniffs when they drink and they think they're all good. It will catch you. You're only human. I know not everybody has to be an addict, but there will be a point in time where you need that.
But it's the ethics of it as well, Terence. Like the community you're from, there's been a lot of devastation caused by the drugs trade. You know, drug dealing, drug trafficking, you know, children being used to pass drugs around, like... when you're snorting that off the cistern in your pub, like, how many people's lives has that been affected getting that drug to you?
100%.
You know what I mean? Some people think that because it's a white powder, it's a clean drug, and look at the junkies injecting the gear. But there's nothing clean about that drug either.
Yeah.
And people have to realise that too.
100%. And it doesn't matter what fucking drug it is, boys. Well, it'll bring it to your fucking knees. Yeah.
Do you know what? Sometimes I just think people need to go down that road.
Yeah.
Be able to understand the devastation that it'll cause them and their families.
Mm.
So it'll all depend on somebody's awareness around themselves. And sometimes they might have to try it, whether it's something for them or for not. But like, it's still important to voice it, your opinion, mine, James's, just to let people know what kind of devastation is there. And you said it, you're only human, like. We all have stuff in here that we're insecure about. You know, stuff we can't deal with, confidence, you know, and maybe underlying stuff. And if you feel something, like for me, I'd know confidence. I'd write a few lines of coke, I'd go up there and I'd ask anybody anything. Do you know, I'd loads of confidence.
Dancing, calling the boards over the whole lot. You didn't give up all it.
If it's doing that for you, then you're in trouble.
Because
you know, then like that, you can't live your life without it.
Yeah.
But you know, people that go through school and it's okay, and then they go to college and they get a degree, and then they get a nice job and they get married, have a couple of kids, they buy a gaff, then they're coming into their late 20s, early 30s, and they're thinking like, is this it?
Am I at the missing out? Yeah.
But at least we got ours out of the way when we were a bit younger, do you know what I mean? We know there's nothing in it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So now we can move on with our lives and work and do the podcast and live shows and get mortgages, look after the kids. We know there's nothing in that. But like, when you've achieved all that, I know you're risking it all, because that can all be lost by them, like.
James, I say it all the time. And look, I have a couple of friends. I have friends who are locked up. I have friends who are dead. I have friends who are in active addiction, like. They can't get over. They're trying their best. But I have friends who are in recovery as well. And we thank our lucky stars that we did it at that age.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to a point where it brought us to our fucking knees, boys. I was on my knees. It brought me to rock bottom. Mm-hmm. I got to a point where I was on that every single day, snipping coke. No drink, no nothing, in my room, every single day.
What kind of stuff did you end up doing because of cocaine? Where did it bring?
Yeah, what kind of coke were you
getting? Great, eh? Colombia.
No, we'd never go into that kind of stuff.
I know, that's where you were going with it.
What kind of stuff did you end up doing because of it? Well, you know, like All drugs.
I'm taking hell.
Definitely not. I mean stuff you're safe talking about. Yeah. Like stuff that really made you look at your life and say, this isn't even who I am. Like, do you know, stuff that you said, stuff that you now understand were the reasons that you actually stopped because of your actions, you know. It could be anything for me. It was all the times that, you know, I left my wife and my kids down, you know, the robbing, you know, the guards around the door, the trouble around the door, all the other stuff around women and stuff like that, all that shit, you know. All that stuff added up into the end kind of Timmy finishing.
Yeah.
What was your story around that?
It's very similar. Like, obviously, yeah, people kind of think, well, yeah, snip and cow, just do the maths on it. Obviously, I took a wrong route to be able to
fund that.
Yeah, obviously, boys, it's common sense.
I'm involved in drugs myself.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
It is what it is. You're not doing it today.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it is. Yeah, I took the wrong route, boys, and I was doing a lot of stuff that's not me. A lot of stuff that I'm ashamed of now, and I look back on it, and to this day, I still kind of think, oh, what was I kind of doing there? Anything to fund that habit, you know what I mean? You don't give a bollocks when you're in active addiction like that, when you need that every day, you know what I mean? So I've done a lot of stuff I'm ashamed of, but in terms of what kind of stopped me, it was around every relationship I ever had. I'm not talking about relationships with girls. My poor ma was in fear every single day thinking I was going to be found dead. Like, if I was going out on the drink, as I said, I was sniffing every single day, bar none. That's without drink, yeah. When I was going out on the drink, my ma was up the walls. She used to tell me all the time. I'd come in after a bender, 3-day bender, 4-day bender, I'd come in, and she'd be saying to me, "Tardin, you're going to be found dead one of these days." Like, you could see the fear in her eyes. My two brothers, stood the two closest people in my whole entire life, boys. Three of us stuck together. We've been through it all, thick and thin, seeing it all together. Them, they couldn't sit around me. I was a very aggressive, very aggro person. Like, I just had this switch in me. I can't explain it. And back then, I just thought, this is just who I am as a person. You don't realise that addiction has you like that. I was kind of thinking, I was always, like, I had a switch and whatever, but they couldn't be with me. They couldn't sit with me. They tell me now, they, like, I was a monster as a person back then, like, you know what I mean? And they're not ashamed to tell me that. They say to me all the time, like, you were hard to be around, you know what I mean? Like, it just brought me to a place that I never want to go again, boys. And again, even during that, I still never thought I was that person because of that. I thought I was just destined to be this person. I always just thought circumstances.
Accept it in your family, in your environment around you. This is what's all that's there for me.
Exactly, James, and that is exactly it. Like, I used to look at my surroundings. I used to look at a lot of family members. I used to look at friends who are in the same kind of position as me. I would say, this is just the way I'm meant to be. Mm. We were brought up like this, and this is just who we are. And I used to kind of just accept that and do it. But I got to a point, boys, where it just brought me to my knees. Like, I never wanted to follow through on suicide, boys, yeah? But there was many a times when I thought, if I am going to do it, how am I going to do it? Mm. And where am I going to do it? And what's the easiest way? Because I can't keep doing this. Many a night I sat up and I cried into a bag of coke. While I'm sniffing it, I'm crying.
I can relate to that.
And saying, I need to stop this, you know what I mean? Look, I need to get out of this, or I'm either just going to be found dead over it. Because, boys, I was probably going through 3 to 5 grams a day. Every day, bar none, 3 to 5 grams. Every single day. When I look back now, I say, how the fuck did I not take a heart attack? There's a couple of times I collapsed down me standing. Like, if I was out on the drink and I'm full and I'm out by 3 days, there's a couple of times I kind of just collapsed and come back to myself then. And like, people are picking me up and trying to ring. I'm saying, don't be ringing. That's not bleeding normal, boys.
I talked to you about crying and taking the coke, and it reminded me myself. I remember fucking injecting the gear be going into the arm and the tears be coming out of the eyes. Mm-hmm. Not wanting to do it, but not knowing how to stop, not knowing where to go. But like, is this what's there for me? And just not getting nothing off it. It's not helping you, it's not making you high, or it's not blocking or anything anymore. But you're still, you don't know where to go. Like, what did you do? Where did you go?
Isn't that the scariest, saddest feeling in the world, boys?
But you know, you want this to be taken out.
Yeah.
Do you know all those different times that you cried into your bag, you cried with a needle, that I prayed to God inside in the shed, up for days and days. All them, you all added to the end.
Exactly.
All them, you won't know, we probably never know it, but all those different things added to the end game for each of us, the demise of us using drugs and alcohol, everything. If all those small bits, okay, weren't here from the moment I started, right, to the day I stopped, all those small bits weren't there, would you have stopped? Would you have stopped here on your last day of drinking just because of what happened on that day?
No. No. No.
So all these individual things, they needed to happen.
It takes a lot of pain to come to the tournament. Don't it?
Boys, that's rock bottom. Yeah. That's rock. And I say it all the time.
You know what? Some people's rock bottom is a grave. Yeah. That's the reality of that too.
Or there's four or five rock bottoms.
Yeah.
Or like you might get it and then you get a few weeks and then you're back at it again and it's like, oh, the fuck, then I have to fucking up again.
Well, that's what happened to me, boys. I didn't just go, right, I'm done with it. But I don't think it'll ever just work like that.
No.
Do you know what I mean? As I said, I was using every single day, boys. And rock bottom for me was, I'm not a religious person, boys, yeah? I just never have been. But yeah. Just not one of them people. Boys, I used to sit down, I'd pray on the edge of my bed, God, please, if there's a God out there, you'll stop this. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's only times when them last few months, boys, of using, I never left the gaff. I never left the house. Never. I was sat in my room and sniffed all day long. And I'd be on social media and Instagram and Facebook and stuff, and I'd see
on the porn sites as well.
Yeah, beyond everything, bro. Yeah, everything,
fucking watching porn all day long.
And you're on that, and
no shame in it, like.
You've no shame in nothing, but I'd be on that, and I'd see people out, like, going for dinner, or I'd see people out having a game of football, or just living their life on a hike, anything. And I'd say, I'll never get to that point, like, this is just me now for life. And, like I said, them last few months were rough, boys. I had many a times where I tried to stop and I'd get the 3 and 4 days without using. And I'd think, I'm done. I know I'm done. And one little mishap in my life, I mean the smallest thing, an argument with someone, fuck that, and straight back on it. You know what I mean? And I had many of them moments where it was like, I could go 2 days. I know that might not sound like a lot to people listening, but when you're using every single day and you need to use, and you can get the 4 days without using, you know what I mean? Like, that was, to me, 4 days was a lot. A week, if I got to a week, my nose was healing and all after a week. You know, the scabs. Yeah. I had all them scabs around my nose, it was just horrible.
You're dirty, aren't you?
Oh, mate.
Fucking rotten, mate.
And, like, if you get to a week, I'd be, oh, sure, I'm healing up.
Yeah.
I wonder what it'd be like to do a sniff. I haven't done a sniff through a clear nose in 4 years. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that would be that was my thought process. I'm a week clean. Yeah, but I haven't done a sniff with a clear nose in 2 years. Fuck that, let me try it. Yeah. Boom, and you're on it.
Yeah.
And then I got to, boys, I remember the specific moment. As I said, there was many, many rock bottoms, yeah? Many, many times where we cried into the bags and where we cried and said, we need this to stop. But there was a moment, there was my auntie's 80th, actually, and all the family got together out in my auntie's house and we were all having a few drinks and a buzz, and it was a great little night. And I remember everybody was going home and going to bed and doing that thing. But I sat up all night, of course, on my own. Everyone, there's 20, 30 of us in the gaff. They all go home and go to bed at a reasonable time, maybe 2, 3. And I sat up all night doing coke in the kitchen. And then my auntie comes down the next morning and I'm in the kitchen. And I just go, I'm going to go into the sitting room now. So I left and went in there. And all the family's coming back around to the house the next morning. They're all in the kitchen. They're having breakfast. They're cooking. And they're all laughing about the night before. You know, the hangover laughs. And I can hear them all having a good time. And they're ready to have that breakfast and all. And I'm still in the sitting room, still going from the previous night. And there was just something about that morning. And I can't explain it. That just got to me. And I just said, you know what? Fuck this. Fuck this again. Sitting there with it in my hand, and I'm like, why can't I just be like them? They all had a drink, they all went home, they're all coming back the next morning to have a buzz, you know what I mean? While I'm still sitting here with this, and I know I'm going to be on it for another 2 or 3 days. Like, I know I'm not stopping it. Once I do one, I'm not stopping. It just doesn't agree with me. And from that moment, I think I stayed up another couple of days anyways on it, and then I stopped, and that was it. That was it for me. I gave up the drink, I gave up the coke, I gave up the gambling, and I gave up the smokes all in one sitting. The smokes came about a month later, all in one sitting. Obviously, that's too much for somebody like me without going to rehab or going in somewhere. I didn't get any help. It was just, I can't explain the feeling.
Did this time in coincide with the start of the Talking Bollocks podcast?
So I got clean in July 2020. The podcast started in November 2020, so it was a couple of months clean. And you know when I used to be on my head in the room, if I had someone there with me, I'd be saying to them, one day I always wanted to do a podcast, boys. Yeah. I don't know whether it was Joe Rogan or James English or who it was, but I'm saying this 5 years, boys, I'm going to do a podcast one day, I'm going to do this, and I'd be giving her all that, you know when you're over and you're passionate about it. Yeah. One day I'll do this. And I have a friend now who used to be there with me, and he's fresh, and he just said to me, it's magic, halter all when you are out of the head, you know what I mean? But I always had a passion to do the podcast. I knew I could never do it in the state I was in, do you know what I mean? So obviously I got clean, it was a couple of months clean, started the podcast in November 2020. That took off, that blew up, and then I had a slip in March 2021. And that was the last time I've had a drink or a sniff, boys, because I tell you, rock bottom. Oh, boys. Now,
sometimes we have to test the water just to realise there's nothing there for us no more.
You just forget, don't you, boys? Like, at the start, I was probably 8 months clean. And again, I had a mishap.
Can I ask you a question on that slip?
Yeah.
What was going through your head before us? For how long before the actual slip itself were you thinking about the slip?
I remember two, 3 days. And I'll tell you what this here matter is, boys. I remember waking up 2 or 3 days before that, and I could taste a drink. Well, I didn't even miss the drink, it was the coke that I missed. But I could taste a drink in my mouth.
Yeah.
I can't explain this feeling, boys. It sounds a bit nuts. I remember waking up and being like, it was like I had a nightmare about being on the drink, and I could nearly taste it.
Mm.
And I was like, did I? No, that was a dream. The relief.
Yeah.
But now I wanted it. And it was like it was almost manifesting in my head, like that I was going, I could see it coming, boys. Yeah. I could. And that was about 2 or 3 days before the slip. And then the slip came, something happened, had an argument with a certain person, lost the head, went on the drink, and stayed on it for 2 days on the sniff, boys. And that day I was rock bottom.
Yeah.
And I always say it was a blessing in disguise, that was, because it made me realise that I was missing nothing.
Mm.
Because them couple of months clean were the best couple of months of my life after being in that rough for so long. To be clean for that long, and I went back to it, I missed nothing. It was the same thing, you sit up all night, you're giving it large portions about, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and all this garbage talk, it's just the same sort of talk about violence and this, and oh, you know what I mean? It's the same sort of shit at the same kitchen tables. Yeah, this fake fucking persona. Like, that, you're not even that I'm actually a good person.
Yeah.
But when I'm on that, I want to take on the world. I'll do this and I'll do that and I've done this before. And I'm just not that person, do you get me?
None of us are.
You know what I mean? But that slip, I always say, was a blessing in disguise. The last time, touch wood, because trust me, boys, I've had a few names. Just now, let me ask you, you'll probably tell me I'm nuts, and I won't be surprised if you do, yeah, because I think I am a bit nuts, yeah? But,
aren't we all?
Yeah. In March, boys, March gone, yeah? Paddy's week, believe it or not, was the week that I had to slip in 2021. So March just gone, yeah? What, 2 months
two
ago?
Two years after,
the same week I had the order, right? Since the start of the week. Now, what I was thinking, is it a week that's in it? Because I used to love Paddy's week. Every year when I was working, I'd book Paddy's week off work the year before. So if I was here now, I'd be booking Paddy's week 2024 off because that was my favourite week of the year. There was the horse racing, there was the football, there was the drink, the sniff. That was just my week. So I think my body was kind of getting used to it. But March just gone, boys. Tell me if I'm nuts, yeah? I got up. I had an urge to drink all that week, boys, yeah? I rang Calvin, obviously my co-host in the podcast. I rang him. We were supposed to do a podcast that week. I rang him, was crying me eyes out. I said, Calvin, I can't do the podcast. I can't get out of this gaff. I was just in a rut. Yeah. I can't explain it. But there was a point, one of the days, where I said to myself, do you know what? I'm going on the drink, right? But it was like I went into a state of bleeding psychosis or something, boys. I got up, got dressed and was going down to the shop to buy a drink, but I wasn't. It was like an out-of-body experience, yeah? It was like I got up, got dressed to go down and get drink, and when I got to the front door, I kind of went, boom.
What the fuck am I doing?
Where am I going? You know? And
you
then
snapped
I
snapped out of it.
It was like I just snapped out of it at the door. I got to the front door and I was like, where the fuck am I going? And then I was like, oh, I'm going down to get drink. What the fuck is going on in my head? And it was like...
That has happened to me.
So I'm not crazy, yeah?
Come on, unconscious.
Yeah.
And then you get a bit of awareness, you bring yourself back and say, what are you actually doing?
Yeah.
What am I doing here? Like, this isn't healthy. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Where's my head gone?
Yeah. I thought, boys, I remember thinking that. I remember saying it.
Doesn't matter how long you're away from a drink.
Yeah.
I still think about drink, and not on a daily basis, but... I still think about it regularly enough.
Yeah, I know it can be. I don't miss the drink, but sometimes, but it's the dunner, the warm weather.
Yeah.
The sunshine, I think it's be nice now, beer garden, a pint glass aside of his ice. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I have to follow that up with my drinking wasn't like that at all. My drinking was Linden Village with a bump really been down in the lane, getting skull dragged by the shades afterwards. That was my drinking.
Yeah,
and then if I think about, it'd be nice now to get dialed up, go to the pub, have a few, Jägermeisters, a few lines of coke. But like yourself, when everybody, that's a Friday night, everybody's going to work Monday morning, I'm around the place looking for an off licence or looking for a bag of gear to come down. That's the reality, and you just have to follow it up with the reality. Where's this going to get me?
Yeah.
And the one thing I would say to you, Terrence, because you're 2 years away from that relapse now, is to sometimes, because they talk about addiction being cunning, baffling and powerful, and the cunning part of it can try and convince you, you had a slip before, you had a bit of a blow, you can go again, just have a blow, you'll get back again, you got back. That's a dangerous place to be, because you can turn into a serial relapse, so your quality of life between the relapses then can be very poor, and you're fucking demented, because you're just white-knuckling it, trying to get through until you have the blow, and then but what you're doing with the podcast, I think, because for recovery, life in recovery has to be better than life in addiction. But I think for me, life and recovery, when I did the education piece and then I finished with the 5 or 6 years in education, the same with Timmy, what's my next project? And now it's the podcast, now I run with that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to find something and making the connections. Now you've one of the biggest podcasts in all and multiple sold out live shows, now a huge following. Your life is good.
Yeah.
And you just have to run with that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because drug is not going to give you the feeling that it is to walk out in front of Vicar Street, people cheering you on, do you know what I mean? That stuff, by a drug will never give you that.
That's what I say all the time, that's worth, that feeling there, if you could bottle that up and sell it, it'd be worth millions, that feeling, walking out to a live show, and that's better than any drugs in the world, and there's no way I would have a podcast or be able to do what we're doing if I was still using or if I went back
and
using.
People in your community, and not just your community, in the wider community in Ireland, they look up to you now. You're a role model.
Yeah.
You're an example of somebody that come from this neglect and violence and addiction and poverty, but you're after making it, and people will look up to you. So there's a kind of a responsibility, and we feel it too. There's a responsibility now. It's not all about me. I have to show other people that, you know what,
there's that pressure. I get to you, I suppose, because I feel a bit of pressure with that.
It can.
Yeah.
It can.
I feel a bit of pressure in recovery, being on, and it's the way I spoke so openly on the podcast about recovery and where I am and what stage I'm at. I feel a bit of pressure now. And even during that week in March, a lot of things was coming back to me of like, if you do this, you're going back on everything that you've stood for.
Yeah.
You know why you stopped in the first place. You're telling people to stop for the reason why you stopped, because anybody can end up on their knees begging God to get them away, man. Anybody can. I don't care who you're at, what background. Anybody can end up in that position. And you're telling people that, and now you're going to go back using.
Yeah.
And I feel the pressure of that, boy, sometimes.
There is a pressure, but the only thing I would say is you have my number. The phone is always open.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Pick up the phone before you ever pick up the drug.
Yeah.
And somebody might say something to you and might snap you out of it. You might be gone in the head and you might say, I might say something to Calvin or somebody that'll bring you back to the present moment, and you think, fucking hell. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, those days will happen, and life is difficult. It doesn't matter if you have a fucking a decent podcast or a shitty job, you know. We all have bills to pay and we have to look after ourselves and stuff like that. Life is difficult for everybody at times. But it's just about, like, when things is going good for you, keep working on your recovery, because now when times get tough, you have stuff in the bank
that
get you through those tough times, you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
Do you think you're doing enough
in terms
in regards to
for myself,
stay sober?
No, definitely not.
But what more do you think you could do to help it?
See, I think
you could start doing a bit of counselling, maybe going back to meetings.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, I haven't been to a meeting in a few months, and like, I kind of got caught up in my own head, and I kind of there was a period of about a couple of months where I was like, I didn't get an urge, and I was like, do you know what? I'm out the other side. That was my finish line, and that was the mistake I made, because I was like, the podcast kind of is my bit of therapy, you know, that hour or two every week, boys, yeah, where all you can focus on is that podcast being entertaining, having questions for the guest, or even if it's just that you're on camera, you're on the mic, and you're trying to entertain or do whatever you're trying to do on the mic, you're trying to tell stories. That's my getaway. That's my bit of therapy. But I'm not doing enough in terms of educating myself on why I'm getting the urges now, because I get an urge frequent enough, boys.
Don't worry about the urges. Yeah. Yeah, that's normal.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how long you're waiting to drink.
Yeah.
Don't worry about them. What you need to start doing in your life, and I'm not telling you what to do here, I'm just...
advice.
Yeah, that's it. You need to probably start getting a counsellor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And you also need to start involving people that are good for you in your life. People that are really good for you. People that might have a good bit of time behind them. People that are positive. You know, you need to watch your company and watch the places you're going to.
Yeah.
Bring it fucking right back to the basics. If the meetings aren't fire, if they're an issue for you at the moment, that's fine. You need to start focusing on other stuff. And this isn't just for you, no. This is for me. It's for him as well.
Yeah.
This is for everybody that's listening.
Yeah.
Because I had a strange old time myself the last few months, which I'm not going to get into now, but... you still need to go back to basics for everything. When it starts going pear-shaped, then it will get a bit tough here and there. Yeah. So just be mindful of that.
Yeah, I have.
You're on the right path.
I'm on the right path, and I have got some good people in my life, boys. The likes of Willie Wee. He's now with that.
Legend.
Willie's in recovery 20 years, and he's done a bit of bleeding time himself, and he's had a mad, mad life, boys. And he's my go-to, boys, when I'm struggling like that. They'll ring
Willie. Roberto Buchel as well.
And what I like, he tells me straight. Yeah. Well, look, you haven't been doing this, and you haven't been doing that. You need to do
the
this.
Last thing you need is a lot of yes men in your corner.
Exactly.
You need somebody that pull you up on your bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
I keep you on the street.
And you know what? I was going to say this before we finish. The rock bottom, right? So yeah. We was talking about rock bottom. We were going, I'm just afraid that I might have frightened one or two people in relation to sometimes the rock bottom is death, especially if someone's listening to this and they have a family member that's destroyed an addiction. You know, I probably came across a little bit strong with my wording, but the reality of it is that, you know, it's sometimes people do end up dead because of drug overdose or something like that, and that's sad and sad, you know. And my heart goes out to anybody that's after losing anybody through drugs or anything like that. But there's nothing anybody can do for another person that's caught up in addiction until they ask them for help. You can't catch their hand, you can't tell them that they're going to treatment, because they'll rebel, they'll walk out, they'll run away, they won't get it. You need to leave them. Just leave them know that you're there for them. You know, put no conditions on their recovery or them getting into AA or getting off alcohol and drugs. And that's what it is.
Yeah.
Be there for them.
But there is a way out for everybody. No matter if you have a family member and you think then there's a way out.
Yeah.
And they might hit rock bottom and go, do you know what? The only way is up from here. I need it.
Yeah.
I've seen it, boys. I've seen people on heroin. I've seen it. My own mother was one of my biggest inspirations to get clean.
And I wanted to give her a shout out.
Clean.
Shout out to her.
You know what I mean? My mom. Right? Yeah, shall I tell you? A brilliant story. Have a listen to her episode. Episode 23, boys. Really, it's very inspirational. But when I seen her getting clean, I thought, if she can do it, anybody can fucking do it.
She must be very proud of you, and you proud of her too.
And back at her as well. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
What you should do. Have a listen to Tommy's episode, my brother's. He was on a few months ago there.
I'll have a listen to that.
We grew up in the same house now, two different people.
It's mad, isn't it?
We have a good story. It reminds me a little bit about your mother. If you thought she was a hopeless case.
Yeah.
Like, we thought the same about this fella. Mm. No, he's thriving better than anybody I know.
Brilliant.
So,
pleasure talking to you, Terrence.
Boys, is a legend. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, brother.
Legends,
thank
boys.
Best of luck with everything, yourself and Calvin, in the future. And sure, we'll cross paths many times, I'm sure.
And same to you, boys. They're absolutely smashing it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Calvin.
Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.